stay tuned for The Lynn Show. If you were listening last week, you heard my interview with Andrei Maleev-Babel, who is the professor of acting for the first year of the Oslo Conservatory Theatre teaching arm. Today and next week and the week after, I'm playing interviews I did with some of the students who studied with Andrei 3 years ago and are currently graduating from that program. Today's interviews are with Dane Dandridge and Devereaux Chamre. They are passionate, excited, alive, not to mention talented. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap with all the time. Says, oh, on tap. Oh, I really can. Oh, I really can. Turn down all the noise, so
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being all of who you are. Not just that part of yourself which you feel comfortable showing. Not only that part of yourself which you came to believe is all there is to you. No, I believe, based on my many, many years as a psychotherapist, that we are all hiding parts of ourselves, that we all learned very early in life that there were behaviors, attitudes, activities, ways of being, thoughts, any number of things, which somehow didn't work in our family of origin, or didn't work in our church, or didn't work in our school, or didn't work with our grandma. And we learned to suppress those things so that we didn't get a response we didn't want. We didn't get embarrassed or teased or punished or neglected or ostracized or maybe even abused. We learn so quickly what it is to what we can demonstrate and what we need to hide. So it is my belief, however, that those things that we felt compelled to hide, we still need them. And so this show is dedicated to telling you that there may be things about you that you are not, that you don't have access to. To make this point, aside from just saying it, I do an interview series called Anatomy of an Artist, in which I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Because in order to do that in this culture, it has to be who you really are. Today, I'm playing back-to-back interviews with two fairly young people who decided that theater was what they had to do, that actor was who they are. And I can't talk too much because the interviews take up most of the time that I have today. So I'm just going to preface to say that the first interview is with Dane Dandridge, who you will hear say that he began making up stories as a very, very young child. He got his first job, although not the first job he auditioned for, when he was six. And now he has not been out of work as an actor, that is to say, not in a play, for more than 4 months in his entire life. You will hear, without a doubt, Dane's commitment to his work, how very much he is what he presents. And in addition to that, he's very charming and funny. I know you're going to enjoy this. This is my interview with Dane. So I'm here with Dane Dandridge in a conference room in the Oslo. And he has just graduated from his 3 years at the conservatory.
That's right.
Which went by in a flash, apparently.
Absolutely. I mean, some days were years, and years were days.
Very lovely. Very lovely. So I want to tell you that I have a good friend who's a director. Uh-huh. You're her favorite.
Oh, really?
She says that you can do anything and that you're remarkable.
Oh, that's very kind.
I'd probably not.
You'd probably not?
No, probably it isn't kindness.
Oh. Well, I mean, the conservatory has let me... I've been really lucky. I've been able to play toward my type, against my type.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah.
With equal facility, I believe was her term.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
So nice.
Yeah. And I didn't get to see them, the roles that she was talking about, because it was last year.
Yeah.
But I did see you in Death Trap.
Oh, did you like
it? In which you were wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
what's more fun than dying on stage? Killing people.
And dying, right.
Yeah. It's a fun one.
Yes, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I didn't get to see... It looked to me like that was really easy for you. No?
Easy? I don't know. I don't really think anything is easy.
Well, you said two type against type. Was that which
that,
was that?
That was totally toward
type. Type, right.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, that wasn't a big... Yes, it wasn't a huge stretch.
No,
but... As opposed to I played a doctor, a London doctor, last year in a play called Blue Orange. Three-man, three-act play, all in dialect.
Oh, my goodness.
And... We could have played it toward my type, but instead, the director, who was my acting teacher, wanted to see if I could be ugly and smart. So, they straightened my hair, I was dressed really poorly, I was always, like, getting sandwiches out of my pockets, and, like, just being really disgusting, unhygienic, gross glasses, unshaven.
Yes, so unlike you.
More fun.
Yes. Able to find a part of yourself you never get to express.
Absolutely.
Mm,
a little socially inept.
A little socially inept, something
yeah,
you certainly are not. Okay. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Great.
And it's clear that anybody who wants to go through this program is trying to make a life with an art.
Mm-hmm.
And that is clearly true of you. So I always ask the same question.
Okay.
And it is... When did it start? The very beginning. What was the first moment you thought, oh, say something, people will listen, stand on the stage, sing, stand on
Well, I guess it was never really about listen to me say a line or whatever. I think it probably started when I was, I don't know, four maybe, because I had this huge meadow behind my house with lots of woods. I'm from Michigan. And I remember making my little brother, like, you know, it was like imagination, like make-believe time. And that sort of, it was the imagination stuff that's really interesting to me, and that's sort of where that evolved from playing in a meadow.
So you're four and he's two?
Yeah.
And you're saying...
Grab a stick, we're right? running away, or people are chasing us, or we're orphans, right. or whatever.
Oh, wow. So you wrote little plays?
We never wrote them, really.
No, I don't mean like, down. I mean, yeah. you created little plays.
Yes,
with
for
your
no
life.
Audience.
For no, well...
And then my parents got really sick of it, because it moved from the meadow to the basement.
Really?
Dress-up box, we got a little sister. So we had a pretty good company.
And you were the director.
Oh, yeah, and the lead actor.
And the lead actor. Okay, so here you are, you're the lead actor, you're actually the director and the playwright pretty much
in
a lot
basement.
Of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you mean it that your parents got sick of it, or you were joking?
Well, probably a little half and half, you know? I mean, they saw very early that I was interested in that sort of stuff, so I went on my first audition before I could even read. My mom took me to an audition.
Are you serious? What was it for?
Actually...
Do you know?
It was for Revenge of the Space Pandas, which is a Pinter children's play.
Are you making that up?
No. It's crazy. It's a bizarre play. I think it's Pinter, anyway. Maybe it's Mamet. I can't remember. But I cried at the audition because I couldn't read. And I swore I never wanted to do it ever again. But a year later, my mom said, how about this one? And that's why I auditioned for it, and I got in. And from that moment on...
So are you five?
Six, I think, at this time.
And do you remember what that was?
Mm-hmm. It was a children's play called How to Eat Like a Child.
That's something you could do.
Super silly, yeah. Sort of like a variety act type of show.
Well, this is real interesting. Your mother is bringing you.
Yeah, well, my parents both supported me through the whole thing. And from that from that point on, I haven't not been in a play for more than 4 months.
Oh, my God.
So, and my dad, when I was a kid, like 11, 12, 13, I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which has a really good community theater scene. I mean, it should have been, could have been an Equity House. We had huge budget, beautiful sets, 8 shows a week. And my dad would, I would get into a show, and my dad would say, can I be the cop?
Are you
can
kidding?
Can I be the butler? Yeah, because he's going to drive me to rehearsal anyway.
Right.
And then he could hang out, and we could have
So is time. There a little unfulfilled actor in your dad?
Do you Perhaps. Think? Perhaps.
You look like you have never thought that before.
I guess I haven't. I think my dad is probably very good on stage.
Well,
he's a very charismatic guy, so...
Well, I mean, this is not a... A lot of fathers would have dropped their kid off and gone home, or sat and watched him, or brought a book, or something.
Yeah. Well, there were some plays that he would bring a book for.
But you know what I mean. I mean, it's just an interesting twist.
He says he worked his way up, too, because he was playing, you know, cops and butlers and things
right.
like that. And then I did a production of To Kill a Mockingbird. I played Dil Harris.
Right.
I don't know, maybe I was 11 or 12. And my dad landed his big role in that one. He played Gilmer, the lawyer for
the other side.
The bad guys.
Right, the bad guys, right.
He was a real racist lawyer. And he's from Texas, so he, you know, slipped right into it. He was really easy to hate, but I thought he was great, yeah. And I watched from the balcony, you know, on the stage every night, my dad being a jerk.
Well, but... I'm sorry, but I think this came down through your dad. This
probably, yeah.
You know,
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, I mean, it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
And so, whether he was consciously aware of wanting to be an actor or not, you give him an opportunity. That's really great.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's lovely. All right, so you've been in a play. You have not been in a play for only 4 months since you were six.
Yeah.
My God.
If I'm not in a play. If a time span goes by for more than 4 months, well, I mean, it hasn't happened, but like around 3 month point, I start getting a little like crazy.
Because it feels right to be.
It's in my blood, and now it's part of my routine, I guess, you know?
Well, all right. So you're in plays. High school, you're in plays.
Mm-hmm.
Then was there a theater department in your high school or?
Yeah. A very good theater program.
So you studied?
I took one acting class in high school. But I had never had an acting class until I went to college.
Wow.
But I didn't major in theater.
Good grief. What did you think?
I got into NYU's Tisch School of Dramatic Arts for undergrad. And I fully had the intention on going because, well, of pressure from everybody was like, go for it, baby, you know, and I just didn't, I guess I wasn't ready to be locked in a black box for 12 hours a day, you know? I knew that if I didn't study something that my brain was interested in, that I would never do it.
Wow.
So I went to this small private school in Michigan called Hope College, and I double majored in Spanish and international relations.
Good grief.
So I got to live in Mexico, I got to live in Spain. It was wonderful. And it was the right move for me because I could still take all the acting classes that I wanted.
And you could still be in plays, right.
And I worked professionally over the summers in professional theaters.
Right.
But it was really nice because I got to, I don't know what I would have done.
I love it. Yeah. Did it never occur to you to have a career in international relations to use that or that?
It did. What I really was interested in was Spanish literature, especially with the time that Franco took over Spain and the time that the revolution happened and the petering out of the dictatorship. That area and World War II and everything is so interesting to me. So I was thinking of going to graduate school for Spanish literature or just moving to Spain. I'd applied for a Fulbright, a research proposal, which I had completely finished, which is so much work. And then I got into graduate school here. And I never sent in my proposal.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a pretty stressful couple of months in which I was like, I felt being pulled both ways.
But you auditioned for here. They didn't call you and say, Dane, we know that you've got this thing for the Fulbright, but how about coming down here, right?
No.
No. So did you audition for any place else or just here?
I did. I auditioned for a couple of schools. I auditioned for UC Irvine, NYU again. I don't really remember, honestly. They weren't interested in me. So it really, in my mind, came down to the University of Delaware and this program, and the University of Connecticut was also sort of in there. And it's really cold up there.
Says the boy from Michigan. I love it.
Well, I mean, I thought three
days. But he's Spain. I mean, really.
Well, Spain's not that
warm.
It's not that warm.
No?
Not where I was, anyway. I was in the northern part. But, and my grandparents also live down here.
Oh.
In Sarasota.
Oh.
So I thought, well, this is a really easy decision. I graduate with my equity card. I get 3 years in Florida. They're going to pay for my tuition. And I get to be on a stage like the Oslo Rep in my third year. It just sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So you said, bye-bye, Spain.
I put it away
for a
second. Right. I didn't say bye-bye totally.
So you still have the proposal. It's still right?
I can't see myself doing the proposal anymore because my Spanish is not what it used to be. But, yeah. No, I think Spanish will always be a part of my life, and, you know, someday I'd really like to move to Spain and live there for a while.
Could you work in Spanish?
Presently, no. I'd have to really get my Spanish back up.
Yeah.
But maybe. It's possible. And I have a good base of friends in Spain that would hook me up, probably. But I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, so you come into this thing, and in a way, at least for now, for the foreseeable future, that makes a decision for you, that you're on a path. You don't commit to this for 3 years without thinking that...
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Right, I mean, because it's hard work, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I almost left my first semester.
This is interesting. This is not the first time I've heard this.
No.
That's interesting. Tell me why.
Well, our class, we were having a hard time together. The dynamic was not... good.
Yeah. Tell me.
Well, yeah, I feel like they chose very strong people for my class. Strong actors, but more strong people. I feel like we're all leaders.
Are you the oldest child? Oh, you are, obviously. We're talking about that. Well, now you're the third oldest child that I've spoken to today. So again, right.
Yeah, so, and I mean, it's great because we instantly had a lot of passion in our class.
Mm.
But the passion could be used for good, and it could be used for evil. And so the first semester, it wasn't just the class dynamic that was difficult. It's that our first-year teacher, Andre, he's a wonderful Russian.
Right.
Wonderful Russian teacher. But the way that he teaches is, it's almost, I don't know, it's so hard to describe, but it's essentially my experience was, it was a smashing of all defense mechanisms, ripping away all the layers of untruth that you would have in your regular life and that you would have on stage, because you can't present anything on stage that you don't have. So it was a very painful experience, I felt like I was being robbed of who I was, or I didn't know who I was anymore, and I didn't feel like I was a good actor anymore. Angela Sauer, our classmate that you'll meet, gave this lovely metaphor of first year in her graduation speech last week. She said, "When I came here, I knew how to ride a bike really well, but I had my training wheels on. But I rode that bike really well, and that's how I got here. And then Andre took off the training wheels.
Right.
And now I can ride a bike, for real. But taking off that training wheels and falling and getting up and bruising and then going again, that's what first year was, and that's what first semester was, too. So,
do you think, of course there's no way you can know this, but do you think that that's true for every first year, or do you think that it was specifically difficult for you guys?
Well, in talking to the two classes that I've gotten to watch go through first year, I don't think so.
I think it was
particularly difficult, either just for me or for our class, for whatever reason.
Well, the other thing that's so interesting to me is, I mean, of course, I have a very limited sample here, but it seems like they chose for your class people with very strong natural talent.
I think you're right.
I wonder if there wasn't a way to capitalize on that without having to destroy it first.
I don't think so.
No.
Because I think what had to happen was our egos had to be destroyed.
Right.
And it wasn't done in a malicious way.
No, I understand.
It was just,
this is what
we were all very big fish in small ponds.
Right. And get used
to
it.
And now we were all together.
Right.
Big fish in a small pond, in a big pond. I don't know what that metaphor would be. But
right.
It was a difficult adjustment period. And I think that it was good what happened, because it was as if, you know, you just hit rock bottom as a person. Not necessarily even in a bad way, but if you find your core person, your soul, and then you have that, and it's not...
And nobody can take that away from you.
Nobody can mess with you.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's,
and then you can build on that.
Absolutely. So that's I think, what that
and
was.
And if you're strong enough, and I suspect that all of you are, you really can't lose what you came in with.
No.
You know, it's always there.
No, it's all good.
Yeah, right.
It's all good. Right. It's just like having massive surgery and removing all cancerous tumors.
Yes,
you
right.
still have your body.
That's right.
And it's painful, but it's still there.
But it's still there, right. Okay. So, but you didn't leave.
No, and I'm glad I didn't.
Well, yeah, but so how did you manage to stay?
Well, we had a classmate leave after our first semester, which I think sort of helped our group dynamic a little bit. Not that any of us were happy to see him go, but I think it did help our dynamic. And then it really was, I started to understand what Andre was teaching us.
Right.
So it was the work that kept me.
Yeah.
Because in the second semester, I started seeing the fruits of the disastrous first semester. And I saw where it was going, and I saw this whole other gigantically beautiful world open up to me.
Oh.
And with a guru guide like Andre, there was just no way I could leave.
You know, it's interesting.
And then I got a contract to do Fat Pig, a Neil DeBute play, with the Banyan Theater that Greg Lemming, the director here, offered me in March of my first year. So I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah.
Okay, so here you are now. And where are you? What are you doing? From now?
Present?
Yeah, from here on.
Well, I'm moving to New York in 8 days.
You are?
Yep. I'm the only one in my class not in Las Meninas. And Las Meninas is touring to Miami. So they're all going to go tour, and I'm going to move to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a few agent bites. Excuse me, after our showcase, which is great, so following up on those, and really just getting acclimated again to the city. I lived in the city for maybe 3 or 4 months before I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And the show that I was in, Bonnie and Clyde, the musical, earlier this year.
Yes.
And that,
oh, God, yes, it's going to Broadway.
It's going to Broadway. I don't know if I'm going with it. I sure hope so. But they're having a reading in a couple of weeks.
So you'll be there?
I will be in New York, yes.
So Bonnie and Clyde is a possibility.
Maybe, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I had a great time doing the show.
Yeah.
And I did you see it?
I did.
Yeah, and I love my track because I'm always changing costumes and coming on as a new person. That's fun for me. 9 different characters I think I played in Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, my God.
So, not that you would remember either, which is also the beautiful part.
No, right,
is
because
that I get to create
right,
the world.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, so you're going to New York, and you're going to try and make an actor's life in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Yep.
You have friends there and all that
stuff,
right?
I have a lot of friends there, really, really great friends there, which I don't know how people move to the city without friends. You rely on your friends so much in New York.
It's not hard to make friends in New York.
True.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I would like to talk a little bit about the second year, if we can backtrack.
Please do, yeah, yeah.
Well, because the second year, because now that I've graduated, I can sort of look at it retrospectively, and I think it was just the best year. I mean, it was completely insane because the conservatory had cast me in all four conservatory shows, which is wonderful, but totally crazy. And I had done Fat Pig, as I mentioned to you, at the Banyan Theater right before the second year started. So it was as if I did five shows completely in a row with maybe 1 or 2 days of a break in between each.
Wow.
And then also, at the beginning of the year, we did the Greeks with our second year, and I played Orestes in Electra, which was, like, amazing. Such a great experience for me. I mean, I'm inclined to do shows with blood in them anyway, but killing your mother and her lover, making out with your sister, like, God bless those Greeks. So that was a really, really insane year, but wonderful, and that is the year that I think I got stretched the most. I learned in Andre's class how to be honest and truthful and how to receive a character instead of slapping stuff together and making a cardboard cutout. But then in the second year, that's when I got to implement it. I got to play. I mean, in Fat Pig, I was an asshole, frat boy, surface-level jerk. And then I immediately played a very insecure gay guy. Then I played Orestes. Then I got to play the Doctor Bruce in Blue Orange that I talked to you about. Mm-hmm. Then I got to play the symbol of sex in Mach and All. And then I got to play kind of a foppy rock star brother in the game of Love and Chance. So it was, like, an amazing, amazing experience just to do the gamut like that. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and it sets you up, doesn't it? I mean, that you can say you can do anything, you know?
Well, yeah, even from the third year, to do Bonnie and Clyde, to do 12 Angry Men, to do Death
that's
Trap.
That's right, that's right.
It's also a wonderful exercise in style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Changing the style of your acting for whatever the play needs.
Yeah, and that's, of course, what my friend said about you.
Oh.
That you can do anything and with real facility.
Oh, that's really, really nice.
And
that's what I strive for.
Okay, so I like to ask, if you think about this at all, what it's like to have dedicated a life, to be dedicating a life to an art. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, that's a really good question, because it's difficult to answer.
You don't have to.
No, I'd like to try. I think, I guess I just don't see any other way, and I don't think of it really, of course, it is. I am dedicating my life to art, but what I'm really, the way that I look at it, I'm dedicating my life to the understanding of people, speaking for people who can't speak for themselves. I think that I'm really just learning how to be human.
In every permutation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes.
Oh, my God, what an interesting thing. I've never heard anybody say that. But I think that's probably true.
I think that that's what it is.
That's
I mean,
right.
It sounds very simple, but it's...
Oh, no, I don't think it's...
It's very difficult. But that's why I say I guess I can't see another way of living. You know what I mean? Because I think that that's what all of us, in whatever capacity, are really trying to do anyway.
Is be human?
Trying to be human.
You don't really think everybody's trying to do that, do you?
No, but I wish they were.
Yes, I think that's...
But I think that's the trick to life, and I think that that's the trick to art.
And certainly the trick to acting.
Definitely.
Definitely. That's lovely and a wonderful place to stop. Thank you so much, Dane.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Good.
So there you have it. Dane Dandridge, trying to be human in all of its permutations, trying to demonstrate what it means to be a human being, trying to do his very best in every role, whether it is like him or not, because he can find in himself everything. And when you listen to Dane, and when you listen to Deborah, who's coming up, you can hear the complete absorption of themselves in this work and the way in which they are pursuing not only acting, not only art, not only humanity, but their own selves. And so now, the next interview I'm playing is with Devereaux, who, it's a wonderful story, who saw herself on, I'll let her tell you the story, when she was very little and fell in love with herself on screen. But also, please listen to how Devereaux talks about the scared little girl, the person who didn't know where she belonged, and how she has been able to become more than that without losing that, and how she talks about it without guile and without hesitation, because it's okay to be who she is. So, you'll hear it in neon, in Devereaux. Here is my interview with her.
I'm here with Devereaux Chhamra. And she just graduated from the three-year program at the Oslo Conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I've seen you in a number of things.
Have you? Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
Well, I mean, you know, most recently in La Bête and in Las Meninas. Mm-hmm. A wonderful performance. Just a wonderful performance.
Thank you very much.
And you were adorable in La Bête as well, but in Las Meninas, it was a wonderful, wonderful performance. And also, as I was telling Angela, I was at the showcase, and you guys
were
just amazing at the beginning.
Oh, that the one here.
The one in New York.
Oh, the one in New York.
I was in the one in New York, and that
which one did you go to, the later one?
I went to the later one. Were they different?
No. I just didn't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I was at the later one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I couldn't stay.
Yeah.
So, but that thing you and Angela did.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Tell me about it.
Oh, my God.
It was so much fun.
Well, yeah,
so
you did it so well, and it was so wonderful. I was really kind of blown away by it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, so I interview people who make their living or their life within art. And it seems to me that anybody who's put themselves through this last 3 years must be intending to make a life with this art.
Yeah.
The art of acting, the art, yes?
Yes, yeah. Just being an artist in general.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely.
So I always ask the same question, and it is, how did it happen? Which is to say, what is your very first memory, or the very first thing that happened in your life that suggested to you that this was a path you might take?
I'll say the first thing that piqued interest.
Yeah?
And then I'll say path in life.
Okay.
I think the very first thing I have, the very first vivid memory of me walking towards a place that I was at in the mall. I was in a Sears in a mall in a city called Northridge in Southern California.
How old were you?
I was either 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Some young age, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was a kid. And we were going towards the Broadway restaurant. The restaurant was called the Broadway. My grandmother used to take me there for afternoon tea. And to my right was we would go past the Sears to get to the restaurant. And in the Sears, there was the dishwashers and washing dryers and all that other stuff, and then they'd have the appliances. And what was set up was a camera and a television. And I passed by it one day, and I saw myself on TV. And then I was like, oh my God, I look amazing.
It's great.
I seriously did.
Great.
I seriously did. And then my grandmother kept walking, and I was like, da da da.
You're kidding. You're moving.
I was like,
you're on.
Right.
You're performing.
I'm seeing myself, and I like it.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
And I really like it. Yeah. And I like the way my body can move, and I like that I can see my body move, and I can make it do things, and I can do all this stuff. But it wasn't recording. So I didn't have this, like, it just wasn't recording. So
right.
I didn't have this, like, document
right.
of it, but
right.
I just had this vivid but memory.
But it's clear you still have the visual memory of it.
And then my grandmother used to be like, let's go to the Broadway bar. And I'd be like, no. But then after that, I'd be like, let's go to the Broadway bar. Let's go to the Broadway, the Broadway
yeah,
bar.
Right, right.
But the Broadway restaurant. And then we would go, and then I'd you know, I'd kind of trail behind a little bit. And then she'd walk in front of me, and then I'd be like, the Devereaux Show. Today on the Devereaux Show. Today on the Devereaux Show. I'd be doing all this stuff, and she'd literally have to, like, yank, do one of those, like, comedy routines.
You're right, with the hook. Right.
And grab me. I'm like, yeah. You know, it was really ridiculous. That was what piqued interest, I think, for the very first time when I saw myself. I'll say, as far as a path, I was taking acting lessons, private acting lessons at 15 or 16 in
How
Santa
come?
Monica because I just found it really interesting.
Okay, now hold on. There's a big leap here from
yeah.
6 to 15. So did you then start to think about that or talk about it? Or
I never found, I mean, I'd always been in something I thought on the side, but it never was something that I thought, Dad, I want to be an actor, I want to be an actor, put me in TV, put me in movies, because I just didn't have the money, my parents didn't have all of that. So by
But you
15,
were living in L.A.
I was,
yeah.
but we didn't have the money for it
no,
still.
No, right,
didn't
right,
have.
Right. So it was sort of an interest, a curiosity, but you didn't have any reason to believe that you could do it or would
right.
do it. Or
and by 16, my dad said, well, I've been talking to a few people, 15, probably 14, I can't remember, in between those years. And my dad had said, well, you know, I was talking to people at work and you seem to be really, really interested. Why don't we just put you in a few classes, private classes, do it. So that piqued the interest. And when I started taking it absolutely seriously was when I said, okay, I think I'm going to major in this.
Okay, hold on. I'm really curious about those first classes. And when you say
oh,
private classes,
okay.
what does that mean? There was an acting teacher, you went to her?
An acting coach.
An
she'd,
acting coach.
Every Saturday I'd go.
They figured out a
set.
Way to get you an acting coach? That's pretty serious.
Yeah.
I mean,
she,
it's pretty
it
amazing
was 20, of them. 20 bucks a... It was by word of mouth. She was she's an amazing woman, Kathy Messick. I took classes with her every Saturday afternoon. I'd go.
Just you?
Just me and her for like
amazing.
2 hours. Yeah, some people think it's amazing. Some people think you need to be in a class with other actors.
No, I'm not suggesting
you know.
That at all.
No, but I didn't know that part where some people preferred the other because I had only been in,
I think
in
this
class.
Is wonderful.
You know, yeah.
I mean, talk about having all of the attention.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's remarkable. I think it's
right.
wonderful.
Right.
It was great of them to...
Yeah, and so I had done classes with her. She would set me up with, okay, well, let's give you a commercial. Start off with a commercial. And she's like, sell me Pepsi. And
really?
I was like, I'm not a salesman. I'm 15. And like, okay, well, if you liked Pepsi a lot, what's your favorite drink? Well, you know, at the time it was like, whatever. What's your favorite candy? Skittles. Okay, we like about Skittles. Well, I love the fact that it's, like, super colorful. I love putting them, like, aligning them and eating the yellow ones last. And she was like, okay, well, sell me Skittles. Sell me this. Sell me that. Sell me things that you're interested in.
Right.
And if anything, find something interesting about it and substitute it because you only have a certain amount of time to sell something, and it can be brilliant, or it can just be okay,
mm-hmm.
you know? And she was, like, so relaxing and so the environment that I think I needed
yeah.
enough to find the confidence. I think at that point in time, I wasn't ready to fail in front of other people.
Right.
I wasn't proud enough to say that that's what I wanted to do, and I didn't think that I had enough right to do it yet.
Wow.
And she gave me that license. I worked with her for years. She got me my agent by the time I was 18. I had my SAG card soon, like, right before I turned 18, and then soon after that, went to college.
So, wait a minute. You got your SAG card. That means you were working.
She got me my first agent. I was saying she got me my first agent, and my agent got me my SAG card. She sent me out on commercials, sent me out on spots.
So, you got something then, right?
Yeah, I got work. And so, it definitely gave me impetus and definitely gave me confidence
right.
and it showed me this completely different world that I didn't think I could belong to at first.
God, it's amazing, Deborah.
You know. And then, so then, yeah, so there was that. And then
hold on, I'm just curious. So,
I feel like I'm not giving you enough detail.
No, you're giving
something.
Me fun.
I'm not trying to skim over anything.
No, I know you're not.
Yeah.
I know you're not. But you can't know what I want to know.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry. I'll
yeah.
ask.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in the that the, I don't know what the word is, the going from, so you're this kid who is interested in performing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And your father at least sees that and jumps on that and gets you these classes, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't heard that much from anybody. So, and you get this really amazing teacher who is not only talented at teaching, but apparently very sensitive to what you needed, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And she is able, it seems to me, to help you access what is clearly there. I mean, you were an actor at six when you were doing that thing with the with the TV, right?
Yeah.
So she was able to allow you to get access to that without being scared, right? And then by the time you're 18, you have an agent, you've already worked, you've already earned money, and you already have your SAG card.
Yeah.
This is between 50, we have a shy kid who doesn't think she can do it at 15, and we've got a professional at 18.
Yeah, professional.
Well, it's the truth. You were working, right? You were, right? You were carded.
Yeah.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Does that not seem so to you?
No. I don't know. I guess because I don't think about it that way. It's work. You just do it. You know, it's part of, you get blessed enough to do what you love and do what can also make you money, and that's not necessarily something that everyone can say.
Yeah, like even in this like hectic grad school situation, I'm still able to do what I love. Right now I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to go downstairs and do what I love.
Right.
And then tonight I'm going to go do what I want.
Do what I want.
Yeah. And that's rare. And it's awesome.
For anyone.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And I don't know how long that period will last in my life.
Well, okay, all right.
Sucking it up as
go back. So you're 18 and you're now, you know, professional. Do you go to college? And
that's what I was getting to. So, you know, I graduated and I thought I wasn't necessarily, I just knew that college was the next step. That's what I wanted to do. It's where I wanted to go. But I knew that because I had my agent and that because I didn't really want to go far, I wanted to stay in California, I wanted to stay in LA, I wanted to see where it would take me. So I kept going on auditions, and then I decided, you know, while majoring in theater, that I wanted to study abroad. You know, I had heard about people going abroad, I had kind of sort of seen pamphlets, and one of my high school teachers told me, you just need to get away from home, it will help you more than anything. And so the more and more I started looking to it, the more and more I started reading it, I became really, really interested. And unfortunately, I got into a car accident my second year, and it prevented me from going from, and I missed a few auditions, and so I couldn't work with the agent until I got myself back up. But at the time, I didn't have enough money to get myself back up, and I was supporting myself, and so decided to take a bit of a break from the agent commercial thing every other day going to auditions. And then I decided, I think I want to go abroad. In this break, I think I want to go abroad, so I did. So my third year, I applied. My fourth year, the year I was supposed to graduate, I moved everything to West Africa and went to Ghana.
Oh my God!
To study and live for a year. And I studied theater and was helping to complete my degree, but our college didn't allow us to graduate overseas. They're like, you have to come home and do all these. They were really, really strict about that because you were also getting, like, you know, you were also getting prices at the university rate and all these things under the university. So they're like, you need to graduate under the university. So respectively, I was like, whatever, I'll take an extra year and finish if I can live in Africa for a year for reasonable prices and as a student. And so I did that, and I studied West African theater. And I wrote in this essay, they make you write an essay before you go, like, why do you think you should be this perfect candidate? Like, why do you think you want to go? This is a brand new program. We're being very selective. Why would you want to go? And I said, well, you know, I mean, just culturally speaking, I would really like to go. You know, you hear about tons of people who are Mexican-American going to Mexico to find their heritage.
Right.
You hear about tons of people going back to Israel. You hear about tons of people going to Korea, to all these places. And we don't really have a place to go because we don't really know where
you came from.
Right. And so I think if I get a little bit of that, I just need perspective on where I might lie in this universe. And I wrote this essay about the best experience that I started to understand about being an actor was about being a person first, mm-hmm. and about living, and that was the best thing I could do for myself. And I think that one of the best things to do for yourself as a human is to understand humans around you. And like what we do on stage is teach people how to be with other people and live and be empathetic towards one another.
You demonstrate humanity.
And I think that's, and if I'm up there preaching, I need to be practicing because you play how you practice. So mm-hmm. I need to be doing that in my life. And I think...
Apparently they...
Yeah.
It worked, this essay. They bought it, right?
And so they said, okay. And I went off with several other students from universities and we all lived together on campus and we went to villages and wrote reports. And I directed while I was out there. I acted while I was out there, which was a really, really interesting experience. I traveled while I was out there, and then I took a break and then I did nothing. Some days I did absolutely nothing. It drove me a bit crazy, but it was one of the best experiences, I think, just as a person, and I think helps feed, especially for stuff like Las Meninas, which I would have never known I was going to work on.
No.
And if I ever work on something like Ruined, I mean... It's incredible, like the experiences that I've gone through out there, I can't imagine myself what I would be without that experience, and because of that it opened me to other things. It made me want this program, actually, because they send you off to London, they set up your financial support with community donors,
right.
And the things about community and what I saw out there and what, like, what the community did for the theater out there and what the community does for the theater out here and like how important it is to have like world views and take yourself out of it and to be here and know that you can be in this small environment but that they take you out of it for a little bit but that you're still support all of these things, all of these major themes in my life that mm-hmm. I hold near and dear now probably wouldn't have shot out if I was there. And then I just thought, I need to get out of L.A. because the world comes to L.A. and I need to go to the world. I need to go out, you know. So, and then I came back and then someone said, yeah, you're pretty good. Like, you're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done amazing for yourself. You need to take this seriously. Like, we know you've considered it, but now you need to. We are holding you responsible.
Somebody actually said that to you?
Yes, the chair of my department said, we are holding you responsible as the future of theater to take yourself absolutely seriously.
Wow.
Get the training you know you need. Get the training you know you deserve. Because at that point, I was still like, who's going to cast me in Shakespeare? Like, what character am I going to be? Othello? No.
Right.
Where do I belong? I'm not a leading lady. I'm not an ingenue. I'm not all of these things.
Wow.
And they were like, it's time for you to stop doing that and grow up and take this seriously.
Take yourself seriously.
As an artist. And we're going to write you these letters and we will coach you and you will go through graduate auditions if you want it for yourself. And at that point I was like, oh, well, obviously. They're like, well, then you need to do the walk if you're going to do the talk. And they're like, we're going to push you out into this world anyway, so you might want to have some steady footing when that happens. So I did that, and I had gotten several offers from schools, which was nice. And then I looked around, and I came here, and I realized I can do this here.
You know, it's so interesting because it sounds like you had...
Mm. It all sounds so nice when I guess.
No. What I'm saying is that, you know, your dad said, you know, it looks like this is something you're really interested in. I'm going to make it possible for you to pursue this by giving you the classes, right?
Yeah.
And then at least the head of your department saying, you know, it looks like this is what you're interested in. We're going to make this more possible for you by, you know, it was like Deus Ex Machina kind of coming in and, you know, saying, come on, Deborah, come on, you know. And that little girl who, even at the beginning, wasn't sure where she belonged, who she was, what she would do, that stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that that's still in you.
The little girl.
Yeah, the one's not quite sure, right? And you can draw on that.
Yeah.
You probably do in Las Meninas, actually. Because she is a little girl who doesn't know.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think all of us, that's the thing, is that I definitely do see that in myself.
That stuff doesn't disappear.
Yeah, seeing it and not letting it swallow me whole.
Right.
Or like just
so you can
anything.
Use it. No, so you can use
so
it.
So that I use it now.
And you don't deny it. You don't say I don't That, oh, no, that's not me anymore.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
So you can still use it, but
for
you
sure.
know that you're more than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yes.
That is not just me. Absolutely. Very nice way to put it. Yeah.
No.
Very
well, and because I've seen you do all of it on stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, what did you do? What?
I did 8 for the Ringling Arts Festival.
No, it was something Andre directed.
Game of Love and Chance.
Oh, yeah. You were amazing. I wanted to interview you then.
Thank you. Right?
You were amazing. I wanted to interview you then,
Thanks.
But I never was able to.
Thank you.
So I just
you.
Wanted to get a chance to tell you that.
Thank you very
All right.
much.
Okay. I
that
like
was
to
a
ask.
Fun show.
It was fun. Yes. I like to ask, is there anything that you want to say, anything more? Because you've said quite a lot about what it's like to give your life to this art.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else that I haven't drawn out of you?
I think a lot of what we touched on last is that I had started out with this wanting to do it, not knowing how, wanting to do it, taking interest in all of these things, like take up sports, and now I want to be a doctor, now I want to be a makeup artist. And I think it's because I had seen it on TV, or I knew that I could be all of these things in one thing. I could be this, like, animal with 8 arms, 10 arms, but still have the one heart, still have the one brain, still have the self. And there are moments when right now I'm going back to LA in a couple of months, and that scared girl comes up, and even right now I was just at the doctor's office buying glasses, and because the woman was yelling the price at me, I was like, oh my God, scared girl. I'm about to start crying. You can't overwhelm me with this, but I was like, all right, I'm going to get up, I'm going to walk out, I'm not going to buy it, and I'm not going to yell at you, I'm just going to take my business elsewhere. And I thought, there are moments when we have these overwhelming moments in life, and we don't feel like we can do things, and we don't feel like we can go on, and we don't know how we can do it, but that we see plays, or we do these things, and we have art, we have something in our life. And if I could do something to help carry that along, especially, you know, I could easily cop out and say young African American girls between the ages of because that was me, but I had these women last night from the performance come up to me and be like, why can we not get younger people in the theater? Why can we not get this opera? Why can we not? I've never seen something like this in my life. And it was beautiful to hear her say that, and she was so moved that I, who, if I given myself a few extra days, maybe would have been too scared to do back when I was 15.
Yeah.
I never did it, you know, and now I just can't imagine not doing it in my life. Now it just would be.
I'm so glad actually to have you say all this, because on stage, we don't see her.
Oh,
you know, on stage, you own the stage.
Thank you.
You know, you do.
You
and no, honey, really.
A good team.
Yes, right. Yes. So, but it's so important for me, for my audience to hear that you can have that. You can have scared. You can have I'm not sure. You can have I don't know where I belong. And you can still be Deborah.
You
know, you don't have to lose that part, you don't have to deny that part, you don't have to be embarrassed by that part, because you can add to it and become what you are, and it's wonderful.
And it's unbelievable how even though, like, the older you become aware of it, and you become completely cognizant of it, but there are these moments that it comes in ways where you truly feel that, that it is okay to be ugly, it is okay to be scared, and 2 years old, because that's a part of the whole puzzle. And even moments with this play, Las Meninas, I feel bad if I don't hit the mark the right way sometimes, and then I have to go, no, maybe I was not meant to hit that mark, because maybe that's not meant to happen. It's supposed to be, because you're not always put together, you're not always composed, it doesn't have to be perfect.
No.
People can forgive you if you do mess up, and that's not the point. And it's so I don't know, nice to be constantly reminded of that, because you think you've learned the lesson and then you don't have to attend to it.
Yeah.
But it's like a plant. It will grow and overgrow and die and continue to grow and then plant itself again. It's a thing that's ever changing and growing, that thing of tending to who you are as a person.
Right. And not losing any of it. And not losing any of it.
Yeah, tending to all of those areas.
That's right,
in your
right.
life.
Well, and the word that comes to mind for me is honoring, you know.
Oh, man, absolutely, you know, totally. You know, yeah. Like, you know, you think you get better and better at articulating yourself with these things. Honoring is the perfect word. Yeah. Honoring and respecting those things.
That's
and
right.
I think I truly learned that lesson where it became loud and clear when I came here. David Brunetti said the same thing. Our first year acting teacher said, if you do not attend to the things going on inside you, they will attend to it for you. And you won't necessarily be
position. You won't necessarily like how they attend to it.
You know?
Right, yes.
So it's this awesome thing. It's this awesome, like, thing. So definitely honoring how you're feeling and who you are and all of the things that make you beautiful and worthy and...
It's clear that you do it, and it's wonderful on stage. Yeah. Thank you very much, Deborah.
So, I hope that you got some of what I got from that interview. Of course, I'm a therapist, and the whole theme of this show is the ability to integrate those parts of yourself which you might have wanted to deny or even actually did deny, and to manage to integrate them in such a way that you can use them. And of course, Deborah's story is the story of someone who has done that and continues to do that. So I don't have any more time. So I need to thank Josh Hackney, who I always thank, who makes this show possible in every possible way. So if you need anyone who knows about electronics, about recording, about computers, you want Josh Hackney, and you want to go up on my website, which is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com, and say, I want Josh, and I will get him for you. So, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that interested you, amused you, compelled you, something you didn't know, something you knew but had forgotten, something that brings you back, because I will be back next week with more students from the Oslo Conservatory graduating class, and boy, I hope you will be too.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. Still got some tang, so you won't hear.